So good to be with you on Air Talk on this Friday morning. I'm Larry Mantle. Film Week is coming up in just a few minutes. Enjoyed hearing that promo we just aired for Fresh Air with Terry Gross at noon, coming on right after Film Week. Annie Ross, who died just a few days ago. I have such a vivid memory. I'm guessing maybe 15 years ago, she and John Hendricks of Lambert, Hendricks and Ross had come back together, the two of them, to sing some of their great songs from the late 50s, early 60s. And Kristen and I went to a little jazz club and saw the two of them perform. There are hardly any other people there, and had a chance to talk with them after the performance. And just one of those great memories, being in the presence of two tremendous artists, Annie Ross, dying just a few days ago. But you'll have a chance to hear her great music, and Terry Gross remembers her at noon on Fresh Air here on KPCC. Joining us for our daily update on COVID-19, Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital, Professor of Medicine and Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases. Dr. Blumberg, a very good Friday to you.
Yeah, good Friday to you too.
Are we seeing a positive trend on COVID-19 here in California? Anything positive to take from our most recent numbers?
About the only positive thing I can say is it appears that we may be peaking, but the rate of cases is very high. The number of deaths is very high. We've had about 100 deaths in California, averaging 100 deaths per day over the past few days. And we anticipate that this will continue throughout at least the first part of August. So that's horrible news, I think. But I guess the only good news is that it shouldn't rise. Hopefully it won't rise higher than that.
Dr. Anthony Fauci testified before a House subcommittee this morning and gave an update on the progress of the COVID-19 vaccine, saying phase 3 trials are already underway.
We hope that as the time we get into the late fall and early winter, we will have, in fact, a vaccine that we can say would be safe and effective. One can never guarantee the safety or effectiveness unless you do the trial. But we are cautiously optimistic that this will be successful, because in the early studies in human, the phase 1 study, it clearly showed that individuals who were vaccinated mounted a neutralizing antibody response that was at least comparable and in many respects better than what we see in convalescent serum from individuals who have recovered from COVID-19.
Dr. Blumberg, you share Dr. Fauci's optimism.
Well, yes, I think the vaccines so far look very promising. And as he mentioned, many of the vaccines that have been studied show a good neutralizing antibody response. So that's exactly what we want, not just nonspecific antibody, but antibody that neutralizes the virus from replicating. That being said, we're not sure that that's the mechanism of immunity. It might be other cells, so-called cell-mediated immunity, that's important for preventing infection. And those studies are just trickling out now. We've had some very promising results from animal challenge studies, too, with these vaccines. But really, we still have so many questions. How long is the immunity going to last? Will there need to be booster doses? At what ages will this be effective? What about people with weakened immune systems? Will it respond? I've got more questions than answers.
Yeah. And the distribution issue, of course, and I know the federal government, I assume states as well, are gearing up so that when there are vaccines that have proven themselves, they can be administered. But, you know, as we've seen, governments have been very challenged in how they've responded to COVID-19. What's your degree of confidence that they'll be able to efficiently get people vaccinated?
The states have been doing the best that they can, but what we've lacked is really a coordinated federal response and leadership from a federal level. And so I think that is a concern, to make sure that once a vaccine is out there, that it does get to the states in appropriate quantities.
We're talking with Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital. If you have questions for him about COVID-19, it's your last chance till Monday's Air Talk, 866-893-KPECC, or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Stacy in West L.A. says, I'm seeing more people wearing masks with vents. I'm concerned about that because it seems people don't understand the risks. Dr. Blumberg, can you elaborate on why the vents pose problems?
Yeah, I agree with Stacy. When I see those vents, I don't know if they're filtered or not. So some of those masks are probably okay because they have filters in the vents. But other of those masks, you just don't know. And those aren't designed for healthcare. Those are designed for industry so that if you're in an area with pollutants or dust, that you breathe in filtered air and then you breathe out unfiltered air. So that poses a risk to people who they're in contact with. And in fact, at the hospitals that I work at, when the screeners at the entrances see anybody wearing those masks, they tell them to change into a standard surgical mask.
Even though they may have filtered vents, I guess because there's no way to tell looking at it from the outside.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And no way to tell, even if they are filtered vents, the degree of filtering taking place. But for someone who's looking at getting one of those masks in which the vents are filtered, so they're not just expelling contaminated air, is there a way to determine how well filtered those vents are?
Oh, yeah, there's industry standards on those. But I still wouldn't recommend getting one of those masks because, again, I think people are going to look at you in public when you're wearing that mask, and they're not going to be sure. And you don't want to have to be explaining to everybody about the efficiency of your mask. It's just like if you're coughing in public, you know, even if it's due to allergies, that's just not a good look these days, and everybody's going to avoid you.
So true. Having been in that position where I've got a dry throat and a cough coming on and you just worry, oh my gosh, people think that you're communicable. Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital with us on Air Talk. We'll continue with your calls at 866-893-KPCC and your questions about COVID-19 back in 1 minute. One of the movies our critics will take on Film Week in just a few minutes is a British drama that's getting a lot of attention, Summerland. It stars Gemma Arterton and Gugu Mbatha-Raw. It's directed and written by Jessica Swale. We'll hear what our critics have to say about Summerland. Also, a documentary on LA's own rock group, The Go-Go's. It's airing on Showtime starting today and on the Showtime app as well. Allison Elwood, the director of the documentary, which looks back on the height of fame and popularity of The Go-Go's and also the group reuniting in Los Angeles. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Dr. Dean Blumberg with us to talk COVID-19. He's the Director, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases, UC Davis Children's Hospital. Diane in West Los Angeles, you're on with us.
Hi, I want to find out about safe testing. There's a lot of difference, it sounds, between like rapid testing, where people feel like they get a result in the next day, versus PCR, and some people don't get results from 3 up to 10 days or 8 days. By that time, then, you know, you don't know about the office, the family. Should there be some test that people should not get because of false positives or positive negatives? You know, are there some tests that are better than others that people are seeking when they go to get them?
Diane, excellent question. Dr. Blumberg.
Yeah, so the gold standard test is really the PCR assays, and those are the swabs. Sometimes they're the nasopharyngeal swabs that go deep, and other times they're mid-turbinate, meaning in the middle of the nose. And those tests are excellent. Those can have a short turnaround time, but many of those are sent to commercial labs that do have a 5 to 10 day turnaround time. And I feel your frustration. You know, what's the point of getting a test when you're not going to find out for 10 days? So that's very, very frustrating. There are more point of care tests that you can get results within 15 or 20 minutes. Those tests are good. If they turn positive, you can rely on the result, but they're not as sensitive. So it means if you get a negative result, you're still not sure if it might have been missing the detection of the virus. And so those are a little bit more difficult to interpret.
Well, and then the question is, does testing really pay off at this point? If to get the results of a PCR test, it's going to take almost as long as you would be self-quarantining anyway. And if the other tests are not as reliable, does testing make sense, or is it just better to quarantine when you have symptoms?
You know, if you're otherwise healthy and you don't need to get medical care, then I agree, it makes sense to just quarantine without testing. Testing can still be useful for studies or for public health purposes, but otherwise it's not going to really make a difference, and you should quarantine no matter what you have. You don't want to infect people with it. If you're hospitalized or you're high risk for complications, then in that case, of course, it makes sense to get testing.
Dr. Dean Blumberg with us. Diane, thank you so much. We appreciate your question. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. From Long Beach, Alan asks, when a vaccine is developed, how long will that vaccine's effectiveness last? Would it be something we would take just once, or would you have to take this multiple times, perhaps even annually, like a flu shot?
Yeah, and that's a question that I have myself. I'm not sure. So the people who are being vaccinated now, their immune responses will be followed for a long time to see how long it's projected that they might be protected for. And then in addition to that, we have to worry about the virus changing. All viruses mutate, and if there's a significant amount of change in the virus, then it might result in the need for more to change the vaccine like we do with influenza to try to keep up with the changes in the virus. So we just don't know.
866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Oliver in Santa Barbara says, I was curious if Dr. Blumberg, being a pediatrician, has seen the latest JAMA study, a study of children under 5 who show mild to moderate COVID-19 symptoms. Those kids were found to contain higher concentrations of the virus compared to older kids, teens, and adults. This done at a Chicago pediatric hospital and Northwestern University. Dr. Blumberg?
Yeah, so it's interesting because the young children seem to have very sky-high concentrations of the virus, and yet, paradoxically, they don't seem to transmit it as efficiently as older children, children 10 years of age and older, and adults. And I think the explanation for that is that the younger children are less likely to be symptomatic when they're infected, and so they're less likely to cough or sneeze or otherwise get those droplets out there that are infectious. That's a little bit more self-contained.
But is it typical in infectious diseases that the concentration of the virus does directly relate to the threat it poses to someone in the vicinity?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that are important. One is the concentration of the virus, and then the other one is how you contact that person, so how that virus gets to you, so the person who receives that dose of virus. So if the children aren't coughing or sneezing, then their contacts are less likely to be exposed to that high concentration of virus. And it might be that the older individuals who are symptomatic then might produce the virus, the droplets, and then result in more infections.
Roberta in Koreatown says, I understand that COVID can affect the gastrointestinal system. Are there any changes there that we could notice that would be indicators of COVID-19?
Yeah, so many patients who have infection don't just have respiratory infections, and there's a whole bunch of other manifestations that may occur. It may affect the heart. It may affect the brain and result in encephalitis and confusion. And then it also can affect the gastrointestinal tract, and many patients also have vomiting and diarrhea. It's rare, though, for somebody just to have vomiting and diarrhea without having the respiratory symptoms. Almost 95 or 96% of patients who are infected have fever, cough, or shortness of breath, so they usually have the respiratory symptoms also. But we know the receptors throughout the gastrointestinal tract, and we know that the virus has been recovered there.
Dr. Blumberg, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking this time to talk with us about the latest on the coronavirus and COVID-19. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend and stay well. Dr. Dean Blumberg, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases, UC Davis Children's Hospital, where he's also Professor of Medicine. Film Week is coming up in just about 30 seconds, and then Fresh Air with Terry Gross at noon today. Annie Ross, the great jazz singer, be remembered. I want to thank our terrific Air Talk team, headed by senior producer Fiona Ng, though Natalie Chudnovsky has been serving in that capacity this week. Our thanks to producers Matt D'Angelo Antonio and Lindsay Wright. Itzy Quintanilla has also helped us. And Sabrina Fang and Julia Murray are our news apprentices. Barker McDaniels, our superb engineer as well. Have a wonderful weekend. Stay tuned. Film Week with our critics just moments away.